Hi, this is David Olowski, and welcome back to the long-awaited return of the Rabbi Olowski Show. And as always, whether you're watching with our friends over at Torah Anytime, who have been very concerned for the Rabbi Olowski Show, which is one of the top watched things on Torah Anytime, I should point out, or wherever you watch or listen to your podcasts, my friends, thank you for all of your kind wishes. Let me begin by saying that when a newspaper published the obituary of Mark Twain, he wrote a letter to the newspaper saying, "Reports of my death have been highly exaggerated." And I've received many emails from people saying, "Are you okay?" Baruch Hashem, I'm okay from that point of view. The difficulty has, of course, been that I haven't had the Rabbi Olowski Show. And so I knew that if I didn't get it started soon, I'm going to have to actually pay for therapy, because that's what this is. I get to work out all of my problems in public with you, my beloved friends. Otherwise, I'm going to have to pay money, because everyone who watches this knows that I'm crazy. As my father said to me once, "You're crazy, I'm crazy, mother's crazy, everybody's crazy." I don't know if that fits in well with a psychological evaluation, but it sure is true. So this has been an opportunity for me to be able to talk through all these different issues and things. And as you know, if you watch the very last podcast that came out, Hanukkah Time, producer Michael, who produced the show for 4 years, was just overwhelmed. He got engaged. He got married. He finally figured at some point that he has to make a living, and this doesn't make a living. You understand? So that's a little bit of a problem, and he's been kind of overwhelmed. At least that's what I heard. I actually received a note here saying, "Please help, I'm being captured and held for ransom by Islamic extremists." So I don't know which one it is, but we wish him a lot of luck, and we thank him for his over 4 years of service. And we welcome our new producer, Yisrael, who is going to be the producer of the Rabbi Olowski Show. And once again, I will have absolutely no say in what goes on over here, because I'm just the on-screen talent, and the people in charge make all of these decisions. And, you know, my wife once made up a professional Rabbi Olowski Show sign, and, you know, Michal never liked that because he liked to hang the sign sideways to the next thing. We never used it. So hopefully we'll get to be able to finally use that. Yeah. And I have received many, many emails. Some of them I've responded to. Some of them I didn't, because it's just, you know, I have a problem. You got a couple of minutes? I got one of my problems. I have a number of problems. One of my problems is, and it gets my wife absolutely crazy, I don't respond to an email if I don't know what to answer. So when a person says, "Are you available on a particular date?" So I don't know. I'm waiting to hear from this. I'm working on that. My wife says, "Just tell them that you got the email and that you're working on it." I said, "But I don't have anything to tell them." Because just send them an email so they know that you got the email, you know? I'm not good at that. You know, when I'm on a telephone call, you know how there are people who, when you're talking, they go, I'm terrible at that. I just sit quietly and listen. And so there are certain people who have a certain lack of bitachon, and they go, "Hello? Hello? Are you there? Hello?" I said, "Yeah, I'm here. I'm here," you know? Constant reassurance. But so I don't answer right away. So some people I answered, a lot of you I didn't, because people were there, "Are you okay? When are we going to see the show again? What's going to happen?" I have no idea. I have no answer. But now, Baruch Hashem, we are back in business. And in fact, even though we don't have an official sponsor for this episode, we do. And that is, of course, Moshe David from Brooklyn, who is the only person who's on all of my online shiurim. He's in Masil Shasharim and Daf Yomi and Tefillah. He's in all of them. And he kept sending sponsorships, hoping that we would have to then do a podcast. We didn't. We just kept the money. But I think if anyone deserves to have the podcast in his honor, it's him. So we love you out there. And thanks for the chizik. Okay, so that takes care of some of the business that we have been dealing with until now. And as you can see, this is the actual bookcase. This is not a reproduction. For years, we've been using a green screen, but just so you can see, yeah, look at this. Huh? Actual Svarim. They're not really actual Svarim, they're just hollow little boxes. That happens to be a true story. I once was speaking to this fellow who was a multimillionaire, and I was waiting in his office, and he has a bookcase, you know, and I go to reach for a book, and all the books are just a hollow shell. There's no actual books there. I guess when you have that much money, you don't need to read. But yeah, so Baruch Hashem, hopefully we will be back in action. And the truth of the matter is that I give a shiur every other Motzi Shabbos in Har Nof, basically from Elul till Purim time. And there was a time in my life when I was very busy. Now I'm not. Now I just sit around and wait for something to happen. I lost all my jobs through my wit and personality. And I have the online shiurim, of course. For those of you who are still interested in joining, we have a Daf Yomi, and we have the Tefillah Shiur on Sunday, and we have two Mesillas Yesharim Shiurim. All of these are online. You can sign up for them. And you know, but for the most part, I don't really have much to do. But I was very, very busy, and I wanted to stop giving the Motzi Shabbos Shiur. Just too much. And my Shapiro said, "You'll have to cut out something else, because today, if you can do anything that gives people chizuk, you're mechuyev to do it. We're a door that needs chizuk, you know." I told the story more than once, but when I was growing up, there'd be a meeting in America, Torah Masor, Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Hanach Leibowitz, Rav Ruderman, Rav Hutna, you know, all of Gedolei Torah, who would get together and discuss how we're going to solve the world's problems. How are we going to solve the problems for the Jewish community in America? And we'll get together and pull our resources. But we knew where to turn to and where to seek advice and who was there to be able to help us. And today, you know, when Oshach passed, there was a machlekes, who should take over. Yeah, some people says Leib Shteyman, some people said Rebbe Yoshev. It was a discussion. After Shteyman was nifter, so Gershon Edelstein took over. And now, who's in charge? Nobody really knows. Yeah. It's a big problem. It's a big problem when we're left without anybody in charge. How many times do I hear people say, "Why didn't the Gedolim do something?" And I said, "No problem, give me their names and I'll go talk to them." You know, we're in a situation where this is the definition of a Dor Yosem. Who's in charge? So people have their own individual Rebbe, people have their own, you know, people they can turn to, but for the most part, right, it's a very difficult situation. And we need chizik. We need chizik. And when I say we need chizik, I mean we need chizik just to get through the day. My father was part of what they called the greatest generation. That was the term. You know, they had Gen Z and Gen X and millennials and, you know, all kinds of different things. And you know, but that generation, my father's generation, was called the greatest generation. They made it through World War II. They made it through the Depression. They made it through everything. I mean, you know, my grandfather came from Poland to America, never learned English. My father grew up in a house. He only knew Yiddish. He went to school. He learned English. And they were unbelievably poor. And my father dropped out of school after ninth grade to go to work, just to help support the family. There was no food. There was no food, you know. My mother, who came from a better, well-to-do family in that sense, because her father had started, if you know Queens, the Green Line Bus Company, my grandfather started that with one bus. and driving around. He made routes and imported more buses, and he turned it into a bus company. And then he brought across his brothers from Europe and put them into the business. And then he died of pneumonia, young, in his 50s. My mother was a teenager. And his brothers all got together and squeezed out my grandmother. So I lost my bus company. Whenever I go to Queens and I see a Green Line bus, I say, that's my bus. They took my buses away. Instead of a rabbi, I could have been a Bala bus, just to show you. But anyway, they took away my buses. But she grew up more comfortable, you know? They had food. It was a time when that's how you told the difference, you know? Today it's like he doesn't have the latest iPhone, you know what I mean? He's poor, you know? But back then it was like you have food, you know, food to eat. So they get married. My father says, I love cabbage brot. My mother used to make this cabbage soup. It was delicious. My mother's a great cook. So she'd make a cabbage soup. My father says, it's good. It's not like my mother's. It's good. It's not like my mother's. You know? So one time he was in the old neighborhood, and she says, he goes to visit his mother. He says, Moshe, would you like some cabbage brot? Sure. Comes home, says to my mother, wow, my mother was a terrible cook. I must have been so hungry. I didn't know the difference. You're a great cook. You know, so my mother used to say, nobody asked themselves, do I find my work fulfilling? Am I enjoying this? Is this meaningful to me? Nobody said those things. So you understood. If you didn't work, you went hungry. The government wasn't going to give you money. You weren't going to manage. You had to get up in the morning and go to work, or you'd be on the street and you'd starve. And it's not like today when San Francisco, you could be on the street and they give you a tent and you have a TV and you have all kinds of things. I mean, it was like lying on a park bench and a cop would come by and hit you with the stick and say, you know, move on, you bum. You know, it's like nothing. So they did what they had to do. You got up in the morning, you went to work because that's what you had to do. I'm sure I've told this story, but it's been so long, I don't remember what I say anymore. But I have a friend, Rabbi Dr. Ivan Lerner in Silver Spring. He's a psychiatrist. It's really just a personal relationship. I don't know him professionally. But he told me that when he was going to medical school to become a psychiatrist, his father said, if you're going to do that already, why don't you become a real doctor? He says, because I can help people. He says, people are going to pay you for this? He says, yeah, because when I was growing up, we were too busy making a living to be crazy. Being crazy was a luxury. You couldn't afford it. You had to get up and go to work, whether you're happy or not. You know? I asked him about this. I said, well, good gazook. No, he's got a good point. So he says, yeah, but people lived substandard lives. They didn't know how to develop themselves more than you were in survival mode. You know what I mean? You know, when you live in fight or flight, when you're living from moment to moment, it creates, you have to shut down certain parts of your existence in order to be able to continue working. And that's where we are today. Person gets up in the morning, they want a round of applause. I heard this from Rabbi Leff, and I tell it over sometimes when I speak in Kohelim, you know, with the Kohelim guys. He says, people are willing to be moise nefesh to learn Torah. He says, what's moise nefesh? If you buy them an apartment and you support them, you know, and you give them a vacation and they got. So then they're willing to, you know, to be moise nefesh to learn Torah. He says, what's the mysterious nefesh? They're willing to get up every morning and go to yeshiva? So I've said this over, and guys said, well, not every morning, but certainly many mornings. Now, I don't mean to be facetious, because it's hard for us. It just is. That's the metzias. It's hard for us to get out of bed in the morning. It's hard for us to get through the day. It's hard for us to handle things. You think I ever heard my mother say, I can't make Shabbos? You think I ever heard from my mother say, I can't make Pesach? There was no such a thing. You do what you got to do. You know, that's the thing, is it's too hard for me. You know, you do what you have to do because that was a sense of obligation. And today, things are very difficult. So when Rav Moshe said, anything you can do to give people chizik today, I understand what he's saying. Because the world is a hard, cold place. And as time goes on, we become weaker and weaker and weaker. This is a process. Gemara says it used to be when the Rebbe was giving shir, he would sit and all the Talmidim would stand for the whole shir. They would stand. Today, back then already, they said it was too hard, so people would sit. People would sit. They would sit, but they would work. I used to remember when I was by Reb Tzvi Kushelevsky, he had this expression. Ani omer zeh od pam, aval tachshiv tov tov. Listen. Yeah. One of the memchas dvarim, the Torah's nikness behen, is shmias ha'ozen. Listen. Yeah. Give a gehair, a dehair. You have to dehair. Do you hear what I'm saying? Rabbi Findel, Zozayin Gezutten Stark, tells the story that he used to go to a shir by Rav Hutna. And the room was very crowded, and he spoke low, and you had to really strain. So he said to one of the people in charge, he says, why don't we move to the auditorium, give him a microphone, and we can listen like mention. He says, because Rav Hutna holds b'shita, this is how you have to learn. You have to exert yourself. How many times have I seen Bachrim walk into Shiurim today, and they assume the stance? Okay, Rebbe, let's see if there's anything you have to say that might interest me. This August will have been in Eretz Yisrael 35 years. And I remember we had these girls' second year in a seminary. So this goes back many years ago when it wasn't like what the situation is today. And we were talking about one of the classes, and this girl, one of the girls were like, no, we don't have to listen to this guy, he's boring. And my wife was surprised, but being the intellectual of the family, she says, don't you have an obligation to learn? Even if he's not so interesting, don't you have to put yourself forward? And they said, no. No, if you're not interesting, I just tune you right out. And that's it. It's your job to entertain me, to make me want to learn. And so the idea of working, tazin tov tov, listen, lakshiv, to pay attention, to put yourself out there, the lost art. Nobody wants to work, nobody wants to do things so hard. It's and I don't mean to be facetious, it really is hard. Everything is hard. That's why, you know, we need constant reassurance and pats on the back and, you know, oh, you're doing a great job and that was terrific, you know, and give everybody an award and, you know, just, you know, be mechazik everybody. Oh, terrific. Why? Because the alternative is that a person has to sit down and take responsibility for themselves. So that's a difficult thing. That's a difficult thing. And so I have been amazed over the years that we have been doing this show, of the emails that I have received from people who tell me the chizik that they get from this show. They get chizik, which is what Reb Moshe said to me is the most important thing that we have to do. And I have to tell you that over these past 6 months, when I didn't have this opportunity to share with everybody, and I meet people, everyone's very concerned, where's the show, where's the show? One person said, I went back to the beginning and rewatched all of them, you know, And he goes, and I can, because they're interesting. In fact, years ago, before there were, you know, downloads, there were CDs. Before there were CDs, there were cassette tapes. So I used to sell cassette tapes of my shiurim. And someone said to me, yours are the best buy. Because other shiurim, it's just, you know, it's just Torah. You know, they tell a shiur and it's over. But yours are entertaining. You can listen to them over and over again. So someone went back to the beginning, he listened to them, all of them, and enjoyed it, you know. I like to think that maybe there are more insights waiting inside of them that maybe people didn't realize. I had someone who used to come to my Motzei Shabbos shiur all the time. And then, yeah, for the good time, you have a good time, he'd laugh, he'd enjoy himself, you know. And he told me once, he says, you know, I was listening to a tape of one of the shiurim. He says, I didn't realize that you say a lot of deep things. I said, what are you trying to do, kill my parnasa? Just say he's funny. A lot of people out there saying deep things, you know, but how many people have that gift? And I have said this before, but I, like I say, it's been 6 months. I don't know how many people remember anymore. You know, what we do here is unique because there are shows that are just litzonis, right? We know them, right? I'm not choshed anybody here listens to them, but, you know, it's just mamish David, straight litzonis, make fun of things. Yeah? And there are straight Torah shiurim, you know? But this is the only thing I feel like where we're able to discuss Torah and Yiddishkeit in an entertaining and enjoyable way. Yeah. Over the years, my Motzei Shabbos shiurim going on for over 25 years, and I would ask people from time to time where they come, and one of the answers I used to get was, "It's the only place I come where I feel good that I'm a firm Jew." A painful answer, and yet so true, you know? Because so many things are so harif, and we put everybody down, and things are so rough, and to be able to feel good about yourself, to be able to have chizik, this is such an important thing. And this is what we have to do. We have to be mechazik ourselves, and we have to be mechazik other people. Now, as it happens, yeah, I was going through the old question and answer file. I don't know if people still send in question and answers. These are left over from months ago. But I started going through the list and I saw a number of questions that seem to address this. So at this point, we are going to start our question and answer portion of our program. And as it would happen, the number of the questions, in fact, relate to exactly this point. So Ari writes, there's a lot of talk these days that we are a weak generation. Are we doing ourselves a disservice because it can turn into a crutch and justification to not make more of ourselves? Evidently, I quoted Rav Moshe Shapiro once, where he said, Olam HaYeshivas today is mamash ason, disaster. ואני לא חושב שיכול לתקן, אני חושב צריך לפרק ולבנות מחדש. Now, I don't know if he wanted this for publication. I don't know if he wanted this out there, but he's not really here to object, so I have a big mouth. As Mendel Weinbach Zatzal used to say to me when I worked in Or Sameach, you're so effective, but what are we going to do about your big mouth? It's a problem. It's an occupational hazard. You know, somebody said to me once, I feel like sometimes you sit and you think, should I say this or not? And regardless of the answer, you say it anyway. So that's probably true. But so what did he mean when he said it's an ason? And I think these two questions are similar. What did Reb Moshe mean? And what do we mean when we talk about us being such a weak door? I'm a big believer in being real. You have to be real. You know, Yiddishkeit is based on the reality, not what we would like it to be. I told the story about this girl who was in seminary that I knew. She put me down as one of her references. And she had protexia, and she was going to be set up with the best boy in the yeshiva, famous yeshiva. So the Rebbe called me up and said, listen, before you tell me about the girl, let me tell you about the boy. He really is the best boy. Him and his chavrus are the best boys. They get to the Beis Medrash 7 o'clock in the morning. They leave 11 o'clock at night. They leave for their meals. Otherwise, they don't lie down. They don't take a break. They don't this. They learn mamish shtark the whole day. And his best friend got married a while ago to a girl who said she wanted to marry a masmid. But she found out that being married to a masmid is not as much fun as marrying a masmid. Because when you're married to a masmid, you never see him. Hence the term masmid from the lashon of tamid. It's constant. And, you know, she suddenly realized that she's alone in this community. So my wife reached out to her, etc. And, you know, it's really hard. So ask her if this is what she really wants. So I told it over to her and she says, wow, I don't know if I can handle that. And I said, I don't know if I could handle that. And then she said, but shouldn't I want to handle that? And I said, here's a very important point. Don't marry the person you think you should marry. Marry the person you want to marry. Because you got to be real. And if I can't really handle it, you know, you have these girls who say to me, I want to marry a boy in learning. I said, can your family support a boy in learning? I said, no. I said, do you have a job? Said, no, I first have to go to school and, you know, and it's going to take years till I can get out there and actually earn any money. I said, okay, so you want to marry a boy who's going to sit and learn. What are you going to live on? So sometimes they would get a little upset. They'd say, so just because I don't have money and my family doesn't have money doesn't mean I can't marry a boy in learning. And I said, no, you can if you're prepared to be poor. Are you prepared to be poor? And they're like, I said, well, let me ask you, right now you get money from your parents. Do you squirrel it away for when you marry your boy in learning to buy, I don't know, food or pay for electricity, you know? Or do you go out and get a facial? Or do you buy yourself clothes, go out to eat with your friends? Because if so, you're going to find the transition to saving the tomato sauce can to boil your egg in for lunch very difficult. You know, I think you should start now learning how to go shop in the Gemach store, you know, where people have given away their old clothes, you know, and expect to get a shetel, you know, from the Gemach over there. You know, doesn't matter if it's your color or if it's in such great shape. You're lucky that you found something because you're living in poverty. Do you want to live in poverty? No, I don't want to live in poverty. So then how do you square that circle? But be real. And so, you know, you can say to people, you shouldn't be that way. I can't tell you how many times I've seen situations where a bacha has some sort of an issue or a problem. And they go to the mashgiach. The mashgiach says, well, just stop. Shkayach. Years of Musa training. That's what I needed. I have this one avera. Don't do it. Oh, okay. Shkayach. Thanks. That was good. It reminds me of this comedian years ago when they first came out with the Heimlich maneuver, you know, to be able to help people, like, you know, when they're choking. So he says, this guy comes out, you know, and he's like, you know, I've developed, you know, this whole new approach. He says to someone, okay, eat this quickly, quickly until you start choking. The guy's choking. And he says, now let me explain to you this method. He says, this is a new method. I've developed it. Isn't it? You know, like this, you know. He says, you know, anyway, the guy's like dying. He says, okay, spit it out. And the guy goes, there you go, my friends. That is our new method. Yeah, well, life doesn't work that way, you know. So when you say, is it fair? It means that you have to know what you're dealing with. You have to know what you're dealing with. And when you try to compare people to, you know, who they were, every yeshiva, I can't say that because I don't know. Almost every yeshiva has experienced this, that, well, it was a story about this couple years ago, you know, they wanted to go and buy themselves a house. They scratched, they saved, they got $250,000 together. And they looked at a bunch of houses in their price range, and it took 6 months. They were looking them over. They were thinking this, and they decided that all these are really too small for us. So they managed to borrow more money, and they could spend $300,000. He says, okay, we're looking at houses in the $300,000 range. And the guy took them around to all the houses they saw the first time, because now they were going for $300,000. You know, it's just a reality. So if you try to use the educational methods that worked on the last generation, it doesn't work. I had a parent say to me once, he goes, I don't know what this kid wants from me. I treat him the same as all my other kids. I said, I know. So I know a story about a mother, you know, she'd make all of her kids the same lunch. She did it for years. And they sent them off to school. And one kid died because she makes them peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And it turns out one kid has a peanut allergy. No, I did the same thing I did with all my kids. I know, but this kid is different. So if you try to use on this generation the methodology we used on the last generation, it's not going to go. I was speaking in the yeshiva once. They brought me in, and I went through the top schmoozen that have been used to destroy people over the years. Now, at the time when they were given, I'm sure it made sense, but today, you know, remember Chatzkel says, you know, a malik threw themselves into an embati resech as a boiling water just to be able to cool it off. He says, and he looks around upon it, and he says, you know who's a malik? You're a malik, and you're a malik. Every time you cool off the learning the base measures, and you go out for a cup of coffee, and you're a malik. I saw somebody give this schmooze to a koilo of Bali Tshuva. Guys were coming up. He goes, sometimes the baby's sick and I come late because I have to take him to the doctor. Am I a malik? You know, listen, you got to know who you're talking to. So when you say, can we use it as a crutch and as an excuse? Yes. The alternative is to put demands on people that they can't possibly accomplish. My brother told me a story where he decided to go back to the gym, you know. And the guy who was in the gym is like telling him to do whatever exercise it is. And he says, it's hurting me. He says, no, you got to work through the pain. You know? So he ended up hurting himself and he couldn't go back to the gym for months. Because that's not the way you do it. You got to know who you are. And so, you know, if you manage to get through 4 push-ups and that was a strain, good. Celebrate your victory, and hopefully next time you'll do 5. And don't beat yourself up because I didn't do 6. I'm not ready to do 6. I got to be realistic. I got to know who I am and what I can handle. When my son used to come with me to davening, and I never took him to shul until he asked. And when he would ask, and he was little, he didn't know how to tell time, I would take off my watch and I'd give it to him and I'd say, go out now and play. When the big hand is on the 4, come back. And he'd come back on the 4, and we would dive in some more. And then I'd say, okay, go out now and come back when the hand is on the 9, you know. Well, let him go out and have a good time. I had an avreich ask me once, how do you make your children sit at the Shabbos table? I said, I don't. That's terrible. It's a privilege to sit at the Shabbos table. And if they'd rather go sit on the couch, let them go sit on the couch. But I'm going to beat them up and make them, you're going to sit here, you're going to this, you know. You got to know people's limitations. Somebody asked for Shach. How do we pick a cheder? What's the best cheder? He says, the one with the most recess. Most hafsaka. Like, give kids a break. Oh, let them be kids. A big problem. So, yeah, can we use it as an excuse? Yes. That's not what I'm worried about. I'm looking at a door that is so damaged, so weak. And if you ask me, what do I think Rav Moshe meant when he said, "Only yeshivas the mamash ason," I think it's related to this. Because the model that we have of a yeshiva system was set up basically by Rav Chaim Volozhiner in Europe. And it wasn't meant as mass education. That wasn't the purpose. At 3, I started Hebrew school. At 10, I learned a trade. Most people did not sit and learn in yeshiva. Most people couldn't sit and learn in yeshiva. Those who could, you go to these tours in Europe and you look at the great yeshivas, they were small by our standards. Because not everybody learned in yeshiva. Those who did. Those who did, either weren't very, very highly motivated or very gifted, didn't. And so instead, what do you have? You have a situation where we make everybody go to yeshiva. The very fact that there are yeshivas for guys who don't want to learn just shows you how crazy the system has become. And the system has become twisted where what worked 200 years ago doesn't work today. Meaning, do you sit down and say, okay, I have a bacha coming in. What does he need to know? There's an old joke that everybody knows. You know, guys have trouble when they get married. Because a girl who's gone to seminary for a year or 2 years has a strong grounding in Tanakh, in Halacha, and in Hashkafa. And a guy who's been in yeshiva, base marriage, for 4 years knows the first 8 blot to 5 mesechtas not very well. So that if he looks over it years later, he's like, Mestam, there was a Pnei Yeshua on this. I say I wrote Pnei Yeshua over here. What is he saying? Oh, something on the taste. I don't remember. Did I learn this? It's not there. We don't have a tefisa on it. So what are we trying to do? What is it we're trying to accomplish? What are the goals? And the answer is nobody asks. You're not allowed to ask. Yeah. You just do what everybody does because that's what everybody does. And that's the system. And is anyone sitting down to rethink? And I think that's what Reb Moshe meant when he says you have to take it apart and build it up again, because you have to start from the beginning and say, what is my goal? And that has to be done in every level of education. When a kid walks into school and you say, what is my goal? What do I want to accomplish? What do these kids need to know? How do I give it over to them in a way that's going to be meaningful to them? Somebody pointed out a brilliant thing. They said, we want people to work together, right? In business and, you know, in life, that they should all cooperate. If you do that in school, we call it cheating. So there we teach you, it's only you, we don't care about anything else. And there's a concept of failing. I've told this story before, but Rabbi Lazarus, when I was in Derech, he had this thing called a no-fail test. What's a no-fail test? He says the test was not a bunch of trick questions. It was the shakla v'tayr of the Gemara. What's the Gemara's question? What's the Gemara's answer? What's the proof? What's the second answer? What's the, just the steps of the Gemara. You have to know the steps of the Gemara. No tricks. No svaris. No lumdis. No. And Daf Yomi, now they're doing Gittin. I remember when I was teaching Gittin. So there's a big machlekes where Rechem was. A lot of different views on where Rechem was. A town called Rechem. So I asked in the test, where's Rechem? Expecting them to write down the different opinions. And one guy wrote, where isn't it? I said, oh, I'll give that guy credit. That's good enough. You got the idea. It's in a lot of different places. We're not sure where it is. You know? But he would ask you the test. So the rule is you had to get an 80. So this one guy takes the test, gets an 80. Another guy gets a 40. He says, okay, you're halfway there, but you got to get an 80. Study again, take the test again. Studies, takes the test again, gets a 60. He says, great, 50% improvement, but you got to get an 80. He studies, takes the test again, gets an 80. He says, great, you passed. He says, can I take it again? Says, sure. He studies, takes it again, gets a 90. He says, that's your mark. The other marks don't count. The kid who got an 80 says, hey, you know, I took the test one time and I got an 80. This guy takes it 4 times and he gets a higher mark than me. He says, yeah, because at the end, he knows 90% and you only know 80%. Do you want to study and take it again? No. Okay, then you still only know 80%. What a brilliant approach. What am I trying to accomplish? Rabbi Oretz was speaking once to a group of educators, and he was explaining the correct way to teach something so that they understand what is the meaning of what you're learning, the text. And one of the people there said, that's great, but if I do that, I'm not going to have any kids in the school because everybody wants to cover ground and to see that we, even though they don't understand it. And he explained how to try to deal with it, but it is very interesting because very often the demands that we make on the schools have nothing to do with education. Now, I can tell you, having worked in education and youth work for many years, there's two things that everyone's an expert on. Yeah, education and youth, because everybody was young and everyone went to school. So everyone's an expert. And it's a problem. So Klal Yisrael is a work in progress. It needs a lot of help. It needs a lot of work. All right, my friends, that is our first new podcast under our new leadership. And if you want to find out more about the show, you can go to my website, rabbiolasky.com. You can sign up for one of the online shiurim. You can make a comment. You can sponsor an episode. You can listen to the theme song. There's lots of stuff you can do. I don't really know because I don't have the internet. It's awesome. But if you want, you can go and you can listen to all these things. And until next time, in the Mitzvah Hashem, it'll be less than 6 months away. This is Dov Orlovsky, and this has been the Rabbi Orlovsky Show.
It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Torah and Simcha, ready to go. The Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Knowledge and wisdom will help you grow. Lots of fun in every episode. And we don't have to rhyme, no we don't. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show on RabbiOrlovsky.com. Torah, anytime, YouTube and more. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Torah and Simcha, ready to go. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Till next time, till we meet again. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show.